So Luke 9:10-17. This is the what's called often the feeding of the 5,000. And to be clear, and it will say this in the text, 5,000 men. We are quite sure there were more than men. There were men and women and children. As you likely know, the Bible was written a long, long time ago, and in a world that was very, very different than ours. And so we know that men were the ones who were counted 2,000 years ago. And so that's the way that the story records it, but we again know that there were many, many more people there. So Luke 9. 10-17, the apostles had just been sent out, the disciples, the 12, had just been sent out by Jesus earlier in this chapter, and now they're returning. And when they returned, they told Jesus everything they had done. Jesus gave them a mission, things to do, good news to declare, and they come back and they're excited, they have stories to tell, and so they slipped quietly away toward the town of Bethsaida. But the crowds found out where Jesus was going and they followed him. He welcomed them and taught them about the kingdom of God, and he healed those who were sick. Late in the afternoon, the 12 disciples came to him and said, "Send the crowds away to the nearby villages and farms so they can find food and lodging for the night. There's nothing to eat here in this remote place." But Jesus said, "You feed them." "But we only have 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish, they answered. "Or are you expecting us to go and buy enough food for this whole crowd?" For there were about 5,000 men there. Jesus replied, "Tell them to sit down in groups of about 50 each." So the people all sat down. Jesus took the 5 loaves and 2 fish, looked up toward heaven, and blessed them. Then, breaking the loaves into pieces, he kept giving the bread and fish to the disciples so they could distribute it to the people. They all ate as much as they wanted, and afterward, the disciples picked up 12 baskets of leftovers. Well, this is certainly a story about many things. There are many different sermons that could be preached from these verses, many takeaways that could be gleaned, action steps that we could take. But one of the things that this story is about is our attitude and perspective. Jesus is challenging us quite directly, I think, asking us, do we see the world as one of scarcity, or is the world one of abundance? Is there enough for everyone, or only a few? Can we, do we trust God for what we need? Or do we rely on our own strength and ability? The disciples, like I often do, are operating out of an attitude of scarcity. I invite you to listen again. This is verse 13, but Jesus said, "You feed them. But we only have 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish, they answered. "But we only have." I think we're all familiar with that phrase. "But we only have." I mean, when was the last time you said something like this? "But we only have," or there aren't enough, or "we can't get," or "that will never change," or "what do I have to contribute?" How could that ever happen? Our mindset, our perspective so often is that there is not enough. Not enough food for the crowd, not enough money. But it's not just material things. We also often have the mindset and attitude that there's not enough time, or that we don't have enough courage, or the right skills and know-how. There is a strong pull toward an attitude of scarcity. It's fascinating to me how quickly scarcity can take hold of us. And I know I've used this example a few times now over the last 3 or so months, but it's such an interesting case in point to me in a number of ways. The example I'm talking about is toilet paper. You remember 3 months ago when we were all terrified, scrambling, worried that we might not have enough? As best I understand it, and someone correct me if I'm wrong about this, point me to an article or something, but as best I understand it, there actually was never a shortage of toilet paper. The warehouses had enough. There was enough in the supply chain. It's not like we suddenly ran out of trees. Yeah, things were a little clunkier. But really what was going on, I think, around toilet paper was an attitude, a perspective, a fear that there wasn't enough of something. And that attitude, that perspective, it drove us to do some very interesting things as a culture. But of course, it's not just toilet paper. That's, in my mind, an easy example to point to. But here's the thing. We are told, I mean, every single day of your life, we are told by this culture that there is not enough. Enough of whatever it might be, fill in the blank. And so therefore, you must get yours. And you should do it fast because the sale ends Friday and limited quantities are available. And if you don't get it, someone else will. And when they're gone, they're gone. So buy now. Consume. Hold on tightly. Cling to what you have. There is a strong pull toward an attitude of scarcity. So what I want to do for the next couple of moments is give you an opportunity to pause and reflect. We're going to do this 3 different times throughout the next few moments here together. I just want to pose some questions. Let me be very clear. You're not going to have to type your answer in the chat window. You're not going to have to unmute yourself and tell us what your response might be to the question. This is just for you, wherever you are right now, to pause and to ask yourself, you know, in what part of your life do you find yourself tempted to believe that there is not enough? And again, this story is about material, something material, food. And so, of course, consider material things if that's where this comes into play for you. But I would also invite you to think more broadly. What are the non-material things that you might be tempted to believe there are not enough of? So I'm just going to give you a few moments to think through that, about 30, 45 seconds here. If you have something to write with, it might be helpful if you're that kind of person, and then we'll continue to move forward. All right. So I just want to give you, again, a few moments to consider that. And we'll build on that here as we go along. Chances are good, if not almost assured, that all of us experience this feeling, this worry, this anxiety somewhere in our life, that what we have currently is not enough. Not enough to meet the challenge, to rise up to the moment that we find ourselves in. And, you know, Jesus again says to the disciples, hey, you feed them. You may look around and think that there's not enough, but you can do this. The disciples, again, they're just not sure. We only have 5 loaves, 2 fish. I love what they say next, though. Or are you expecting us to go and buy enough food for this whole crowd? Now, if you're listening to those words, you should be hearing a lot of snark and feistiness, right? This isn't a genuine question. There are 5,000 plus people in front of them. they know they cannot go into town and buy enough food for everybody. So this isn't a genuine question. This is a snarky question. This is a question laced with sarcasm. And I think that's so interesting to me, because I think an attitude of scarcity has a way of making us snippy and maybe even cynical. Have you experienced this at all? You know, there's a problem, a challenge, something difficult out in the world or in your life, and you just feel like there's no way that problem is ever going to be overcome. There's no way we're ever going to get beyond that or fix that. And so you become cynical about it. Well, the unfortunate thing about cynicism is that it has a way of leading us away from a trust in God and toward a trust in ourselves. When things feel too big, when we feel like there's not enough, that there's no way that something could happen or things could become better, that cynicism can lead us away from trust, from believing that God will be faithful or will provide what we need. And the alternative then, when we turn away from God, when we no longer trust God, well, we end up trusting something usually, and it's quite often ourselves. So here's another question for reflection. When faced with the fear of not having enough, do you tend to rely on yourself? And if so, how? Just give that a moment of thought and consideration, and then we'll come back together. So, what is actually true? Is God's world, this world, one of scarcity or abundance? Is the only option that we have to rely on ourselves to fight and claw for everything? Or can I live a free and generous life? Because there is, in fact, more than enough in God's world and economy. Listen again to these words from the end of the story. Jesus replied, "Tell them to sit down in groups of about 50 each." So the people all sat down. Jesus took the 5 loaves and 2 fish, looked up toward heaven, and blessed them. Then breaking the loaves into pieces, he kept giving the bread and fish to the disciples so they could distribute it to the people. They all ate as much as they wanted, and afterward, the disciples picked up 12 baskets of leftovers. In middle school, my best friend was Eric DeGroot. Eric and I were tight. And I was often over at his house. One of the first times that I was there, he says to me somewhere near dinner time, "Hey, you want to make some spaghetti?" And I was like, "Yeah, I love spaghetti. Let's do this." And so we get a pot of water and get it to boil and throw the noodles in and take the noodles out and rinse them and or not rinse them. I don't remember what you're supposed to do. Get the sauce ready. And then Eric did something I did not expect. He took out a giant Tupperware container. Not 2 plates like I thought he would. No, no, no. A giant Tupperware container. And he proceeded to put all the noodles into the Tupperware container and then all of the sauce. And then he mixed it up and then put the Tupperware container into the refrigerator. And I remember just standing there thinking, what is happening? I thought we were about to have dinner. And I came to learn that they loved leftover spaghetti more than fresh spaghetti. They thought the flavors were better. And I actually think they are probably right. And so this is what they would do. This is how they would go about it. Now, don't worry. I know you're concerned. They did feed me. Okay. So I was fine. Don't worry. But that was a very interesting experience for me. I learned something about leftovers from Eric. And in this story, there's something to learn from leftovers as well. You see, there are 2 stories in the Gospels of Jesus feeding large crowds, and both of them end with everyone eating everything that they need and the disciples collecting the leftovers. Both stories end that way. It's as if God is trying to teach us something. See, even when everything tells you that there is not enough, in reality, what is actually true is that in God's world, there's not just enough, there is more than enough. God's abundance leaves us with leftovers. And I've often wondered, what do you think happened to those leftovers? They didn't throw them away. You didn't throw food away, period. And so what happened to them? I like to think that the disciples took some of them home with them, wherever home might have been that night. And so at breakfast the next morning and at lunch and maybe again at dinner, they had this meal that reminded them every time they touched and tasted and pulled it out from the fridge, they remembered the abundance that God showed them there, that they were provided for. And not that they just had enough, but they had more than enough. You see, when Jesus told the disciples to feed the crowd, they were skeptical and cynical, and I get it. I would have been too had I been a disciple. I mean, the constant message of our culture is that there's not enough. Some needs that we encounter, like a massive crowd of human beings, it just seems too big to ever be able to make right. We are certainly feeling that today with the things that are happening in our world around racism, around this deepening political divide that is, it feels to me, ripping our country in two. we look out at these things and we say there's just not enough, whatever it might be, goodwill, compassion, empathy. And so for some of us, I think we encounter this in our lives and we become cynical, skeptical. And as we've talked about, cynicism and skepticism can be really dangerous. So what do we do? How do those things get changed in us? I think as we see in this story, it is experience that transforms the skepticism and the cynicism of the disciples into trust and generosity. Experience is so important. It's fine to preach, it's fine to talk, that's good and can be helpful. But ultimately, it is experiencing the provision of God, the love of God, the mercy of God. It is experiencing it that transforms our skepticism and cynicism into trust and generosity. It's when we actually get to taste the food that's needed for the crowds, or when we actually find courage that we didn't know was in us, or when we experience undeserved forgiveness from someone that we've wronged, or when the bills get paid and we're not sure how it happened, or when we discover and open ourselves to a love that is limitless, that holds us up, that meets us wherever we are. It is in the experience of God's goodness and care and provision that our cynicism and skepticism begin to fade and trust has the ability to rise up. So here's a final question. I'm going to give you a couple minutes on this one because you may need it to look back in the last couple of weeks or in the last decades. Wherever your mind takes you, as you consider how has God met you, met your needs? In what ways have you experienced God's care and provision? And I would invite you to be specific. How has God met you? And in what ways have you experienced care and provision? Give that a couple of minutes of thought. Write that down if you like, and then we'll wrap up here together. So I want to invite us to end in a way that's a little different. We haven't done this exactly before, but I want to invite you here to ask yourself, what is one thing you're taking away from this story, from this passage? Is there a word or a phrase? Is there a different way that you want to think? A different posture you want to take? Is there a step, an action for you to make? Maybe it's something else entirely. What's one thing you're taking away from this morning's story? And what I'm going to invite you to do, and this is the part we haven't done before, I'm going to put you back or give you the opportunity to go back into those same breakout rooms you were in a few moments ago, earlier this morning, and to just share with those people in your breakout room what the one thing is that you're taking away. Now, number one, we haven't done this before. You may be like, oh my gosh, I'm not comfortable doing that. That's fine. You don't have to go into that breakout room. That's number one. Number two, though, I'd encourage you to consider going. And you're welcome, of course, to share whatever you'd like to share, including whatever you'd like not to share. You don't have to share. So you can keep this as deep or as close to the surface as you might like to. And again, it might be as simple as a word or a phrase, and you don't have to share any more than that. We're going to take just a couple of minutes. So, in fact, you won't have time to go into great depth about your life's story and to bare your soul. You'll just have a few moments to share one thing that you're taking away. So, again, you don't have to join these rooms if you don't want to, but I'm going to open them back up. I'll keep an eye out to make sure that if you're alone in a room, that you get into a room with some people. We'll take just a few minutes to do this, to share one thing that we're taking away from this morning.